Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Coming up on Heard on the Street, the political uproar over orphan drugs and the zombies that haunt the U.S. retail industry.
Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello and welcome to Heard on the Street, the podcast. We are the Wall Street Journal's home for commentary on all things financial all over the world. Reporting from New York, I'm Miriam Godfrey, joined by my colleague Spencer Jacob. Good to have you, Spencer.
Good to be here.
In our second segment, we'll talk about the long list of U.S. retailers that are teetering on the edge of bankruptcy but can't seem to call it quits. But first, we have Heard on the Street's Charlie Grant here to talk to us about orphan drugs. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Miriam.
So, orphan drugs are drugs that are developed for small portions of the population to treat certain rare diseases. Why has this become such an important source of growth for the pharma industry?
Well, thanks for having me, Miriam. And since 1983, when this law came into being, more than 600 drugs have been approved under the Orphan Drug Act.
So there's a law that allows for these drugs to get funding? Is that?
Yeah, exactly. So basically the FDA, because, there was a time when pharma would overlook rare diseases because there weren't enough patients to treat and there wasn't much money in it. So the government made it easier for these companies to get drugs approved, you know, speed up approval times, give special tax breaks, give special, you know, goodies to induce pharma companies to develop these drugs. And it's been a long-time success both for patients and investors. But lately, there's been a couple scandals that have people concerned that the system is being abused.
Yeah, so you wrote about the case of Marathon Pharmaceuticals that And I was really surprised to see the amount of money involved. I mean, the amount of money involved, even if they don't bring the drug to market, if they do it on a delayed basis since they've gotten some blowback. I mean, was it so lucrative in the early days, or has it just become that way recently?
A little bit of both. I mean, so just for everyone who's not familiar, Marathon Pharmaceuticals announced approval of an old steroid called deflazacort. To treat patients with a rare disease called Duchenne muscular dystrophy. This is a terminal disease, very bad if you get it. New treatments are badly needed. But this is not a new treatment. This has been available in other countries for decades, and then just no one had ever bothered to file for approval with the Food and Drug Administration, and they're going to charge $89,000 a pill. They have since, they have since paused that launch amid a serious public outcry and we've seen this fight over drug prices before. They're just the latest to catch the public's wrath. But this issue has raised some questions because Marathon is entitled under the law to certain benefits that they can actually sell to other companies. Mm-hmm. So they're in position to make a lot of money even if they never sell a piece of this drug.
Because they've been given permission under the law to sell it. They can actually just trade that permission with other companies.
Exactly. Under certain instances, you qualify for what's known as a priority review voucher. And this lets you, cut the line, so to speak, in the regulatory queue and have the FDA review your drug faster. And
companies will pay money for that.
Yes. And on a net.
But it can be for a different drug. So they can sell that voucher to another company that wants its drug approved more quickly.
Exactly. And the last, transactions don't happen that often, but they do happen. And in 2015, one of these things was sold for $350 million.
Wow.
So
that makes $89,000 a year look kind of small.
Marathon, Marathon has gotten a lot of heat for their behavior and,
What, is it for the pricing or for their interest in selling their voucher that they've gotten heat?
Well, they have the pricing more than anything else, but it's raised questions about whether the incentives are too generous to these companies. And that presents a big risk for pharma because in the last few years, anywhere from a third to 50% of new drugs approved are orphan drugs. Mm-hmm. And, they don't want to upset the golden Goose. And it's been a good thing for patients, too. It's not just a giveaway to business.
If you have a rare disease, you otherwise, before this drug, might not have had a chance of getting a pharma company to figure out, you know, that it was worth it to provide a drug for you.
Exactly, exactly. But, you know, and then some other provisions of the law are getting attention now. I mean, Marathon, under the law, you have 7 years of regulatory, you know, exclusivity, no competition for your product if you develop an orphan drug. And that's true whether or not you own a patent on the medicine. So you don't necessarily have to invent anything new to qualify for this.
So are there companies now scouring the world for drugs that people just, you know, they don't necessarily have a patent for, they haven't done any R&D, but they said, like, you know, this is also a treatment for X, and we're going to get, you know, just basically do it for the voucher, even if we don't, you know, we don't gouge people on the price of the drug necessarily.
Yeah, yeah. And Marathon is not the first one to try this, but this example was so extreme and generated such an outcry that now there's a renewed focus on this. I mean, we had top congressional Republicans wondering out loud whether the system is being gamed earlier this week. Mm-hmm. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, the main industry lobby, Marathon CEO Jeff Aronin is on their board of directors. Mm-hmm. But now pharma is out saying that Marathon does not reflect their values as an organization.
So they're really trying to distance themselves from it.
Yes, and they said they're going to be undertaking a review of membership criteria on Wednesday night for what it takes to be in this organization. And I mean, you know, you can figure out what that probably means.
Charlie, if they review this law, do you think it will be like a wholesale rescinding of the law, or would it be like we're going to try to close some loopholes in this law?
Almost certainly the latter. I mean, I don't think any politician wants to be seen as depriving patients of rare and bad diseases of needed treatments. And there's certainly an argument to be made that this law is essential for getting those drugs to patients. But, you know, I mean, the law has a lot of generous goodies, and even changing a couple things could be bad for the industry.
So worse for the industry than for patients, probably.
In all likelihood. And, you know, I mean, these are changes at the margin and might affect, you know, individual companies more than the entire industry as a whole. But, you know, one of the main tailwinds for biotech investors over the years lately is that the government has been working with them and making it easy to do their job. And if companies keep abusing the system, they really run the risk of killing the golden goose. And, I mean, that, you know, there's been a lot of outcry over prescription drug prices for a long time. It comes and goes. It's kind of a political issue. But this iteration of the outcry is very strong, and it would be a mistake to ignore it.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to take a break. Coming up, the struggling retailers that just won't die.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Veronica Dagger. Do you want to know how the rich invest, spend, and protect their money? Then listen to the Watching Your Wealth podcast. For more information, check us out at wsj.com/podcasts and find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and now Spotify.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome back to Heard on the Street, the podcast. I'm Spencer Jacob, here with Miriam Gottfried and Charlie Grant. So, Miriam, you wrote this week that a large number of retailers are on the brink of bankruptcy, more than at any point since the recession. You mentioned David's Bridal, Tom's Shoes, J. Crew. Why are so many companies with seemingly good brands doing so poorly?
Well, it's an interesting question, but a lot of them are in this position because they were taken private via LBOs, leveraged buyouts. And in those cases, as you know, the retailer or the business gets loaded up with debt, and then the private equity firm that does the LBO oftentimes comes in to try to cut costs or even, you know, spur growth, and then, you know, the company eventually grows into its capital structure and they take it public again. That's sort of the ideal trajectory. That really has not worked out for a lot of these companies. And in a lot of cases, the private equity investors really underestimated the costs involved with running a retailer these days. Mm-hmm. And a big one is e-commerce. You have to continuously invest in having an e-commerce presence, and it's a new cost on top of all your costs, and you aren't really offsetting it with new sales. So a lot of these companies just have not been able to get ahead of their debt.
That's interesting because a lot of people, you know, assume when you close a brick and mortar retail store that, you know, there's a lot, everyone can see the costs in that, but people assume that, you know, running a business on the internet is some sort of free ride.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, you know, I guess intuitively you would think, oh, well, you know, without a store, I don't have any costs. You know, I can just run my business. I'm cutting all these costs of being a retailer. But in fact, as we've talked about before on this podcast, having a store actually allows you to get leverage over fixed costs. So you have a store that you built. You've got all your employees. You've got all your utilities that you pay for that store. The more sales you can run through that store, the more money you make. It's pretty simple. With e-commerce, your costs are variable. You have, first of all, the constant investment you need to make in maintaining the platform, but then you also have the investment in free shipping that you need to make, which basically has become a requirement in the world of Amazon.com. Either free shipping or reduced cost shipping or, you know, free returns or two-day shipping. All of these things are expensive, and the cost rises incrementally with the number of sales that you make.
And so these leverage buyouts happen. I mean, they kind of didn't really see the future with Amazon kind of eating everyone's lunch. But also, you haven't seen that many bankruptcies. These companies are kind of sticking around. I mean, hence your sort of, you know, your moniker of zombie retailers. I mean, why is it so hard for a retailer to sort of, you know, finally close its doors rather than retrench slowly?
So in the past, it used to be that retailers that were suffering were able to live because they didn't have that much debt. That's obviously not the case with these retailers. These retailers have a lot of debt. But we're in an environment where investors have sought high yield wherever they can find it. And the bonds for these retailers have become attractive for that reason. And so when a maturity starts looming on the horizon and one of these troubled retailers decides it's not going to be able to pay it, it goes to investors and says, look, you don't want us to go bankrupt. We don't want to go bankrupt. Let's renegotiate. And investors have been willing to take a haircut in a lot of cases or agree to creative strategies to, sort of help the retailer live another day.
But do you see that coming to a close now? Interest rates are rising. I mean, definitely the competitive landscape is not getting any easier for these people. I mean, who's closest to the brink? And do you see some of these companies just disappearing off the landscape entirely?
I do see them eventually disappearing off the landscape, but I think it'll take a lot longer than it seems. First of all, not that many of them have maturities. You know, they've sort of been able to deal with them in the way that I described. Gymboree is one that has a maturity in February 2018, so that's coming up pretty soon. They're going to have to figure out what to do about that. But if history is any guide, they'll probably be able to work something out. And it's just,
kicking the can down the road is always an attractive option on Wall Street.
And I think, you know, there's some sense that, oh, if these guys are allowed to go bankrupt, the malls will go dark, and that will be bad for all retail. But what I argue is the malls are going to go dark. Some of the bad malls just are. There's no end game here for these guys. It's just, as Charlie said, kicking the can down the road. So I think I'm pushing for investors, for these bondholders to just say, no, I'm not going to do this time. Mm-hmm. And put these guys out of their misery and you know, maybe allow some of the healthier retailers to thrive off the spoils. I mean, the counter argument is malls are dark. That's bad for all retailers. But in general, stores need to close. And I think this is one way to facilitate that.
And I mean, and the flip side of that, do you think that there are maybe not thriving, but pretty healthy retailers who could be doing a lot better if you didn't have such an easy financing environment? I mean, you have all these competitors who are just hanging on by their fingernails. When they, you know, when Sports Authority closed, you know, it was good for Modell's. When Linens and Things went bust, it was good for Bed Bath and Beyond. I mean, you know, are they kind of waiting around for something to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the retailer. I think in general, yes, it's necessary to take these stores out, and in the end, ultimately, the healthier guys will benefit. But there will be some pain in the meantime, especially if you're a mall retailer. Like, Linens and Things wasn't really a mall retailer. It was sort of a big box. But if you're, you know, Claire's Stores, you are occupying a spot in the mall. So if you shut down, then who knows if somebody else will move into that spot. And it could kind of lead to sort of a somber mood in the mall, which could potentially hurt retailers in the short term. But I think the writing's on the wall. As I said, some of these underperforming malls are probably going to eventually close. And we just need to enable the shift to happen and allow some of the sales to migrate over to the healthier guys.
So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on the future of retail zombies.
News on the go. Whenever you want it, wherever you want it. WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Okay, Miriam, last question. Is there any hope for this industry? I mean, retail has been in decline, you know, for years and years, and the force of Amazon just seems overwhelming to outsiders who look. So, I mean, is there hope for some kind of rebound here?
I think so. I mean, I actually do not think that brick and mortar retailers will go away completely. And the reason I don't think so is because I think there needs to be some sort of a resource for people who want to be able to go into a store and try something on or, you know, to look at a product. People still want that. But as sales shift online, we need to right size the industry. Stores need to close and a proportionate number of them need to close. So these retail zombies, I think, are holding up that process. But I do think that there is a place for the brick and mortar store and that they can become healthier over time as these processes are allowed to play out.
Okay, we're going to have to end it there. That wraps things up for this week's Heard on the Street podcast. Please join us every week for the latest in global investing. For more, please check us out at wsj.com/heard. That's wsj.com/heard. You can also email us with your comments, suggestions, or questions at heardpodcast@wsj.com. From New York, I'm Spencer Jacob. On behalf of the rest of the Heard on the Street team, thanks for listening.
For more podcasts, check us out at wsj.com/podcasts. Become a subscriber on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and now look for us on the Google Play Music app on Android devices.